Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's so good to have everyone with us as we head into the true dog days of summer. That's right, August is the month where you wonder, why was I looking forward to summer all winter long? Because it gets to be a bit much. And of course, it's hot everywhere, which puts the climate kooks up in high gear. So at least they provide some entertainment. But then, you know, you have the fires and the helicopters colliding. And I saw that, I believe it was in either France or Greece. I can't recall, but I saw I didn't click through to watch the video of the helicopters crashing into each other because I don't need to see that. But I saw that, and it reminded me when I first went into the service how two helicopters crashed into each other. Have I already told this story? I've already told this story. Anyway, my very first operation, two helicopters crash into each other. Everybody's killed. And I vowed never to get on a helicopter, and I kept that vow. And to this day, I've not yet been on a helicopter. I told that story to a friend of mine, and he has responded by signing up to get a helicopter license. He's taking helicopter flight lessons right now to prove that he's braver than me, I think, which is fine by me. I will not get on his helicopter either, but the fires are horrible and awful. And yes, it's hot and dry. And it's not because you haven't recycled enough or because you have unresolved sin with your creator. It's because it's summertime. That's right. It goes all the way back to Genesis when God said summer and winter and all the seasons will continue, right? So anyway, it goes back a long way, so don't freak out about it, but it is going to be hot. In fact, it's hot right now in the Weekly Worldview studios, and it's only going to get hotter as we go forward because we got so much on the big show today. Where do I want to start? Do I want to start with, I was a little perturbed, when I read the news this morning. Now, I did not check the news from midday Friday until this morning because I like to take one day off and just remember that it doesn't matter if I look at it or not because it still goes on. And it's never the end of the world. It's just more news. And if it was the end of the world, I would know about it. I wouldn't even have to read the news if it turned out it was the end of the world. So take a day off from all news is my advice to you. It works well for me. But I opened up the news this morning and I was somewhat disquieted to see that the president's weekly to bi-weekly peace deal that he has made, not made, unmade, made with Iran, that weekly deal that's been going on for a while now, that appeared on all my aggregator websites, that appeared above the fold, whereas the mass shooting at an In-N-Out Burger was way below the fold, down in normal-sized letters, not even bright red. And maybe it was yesterday. I think it happened yesterday. Twin Falls, Idaho. Brand new In-N-Out Burger opens up. What does that guarantee? A large crowd of potentially unarmed people. And so a maniac with what looked to me like some version of a homemade Kalashnikov, he goes and he starts shooting the place up. Two dead, seven wounded at last count. The shooter appears to have killed himself at the end after being shot at by an armed Iowa resident. Idaho. Yeah, Twin Falls, Idaho. Did I say Iowa? I meant Idaho. I don't have the story here in front of me. But a mass shooting at In-N-Out Burger should be above the fold in big, bright red letters all weekend. but it's not anymore because maybe the body count wasn't high enough. I'm not sure what the aggregators or the news outlets go by anymore. To me, the shock value of a mass shooting at an In-N-Out, that's pretty shocking. At any fast food joint, any burger joint, it's pretty shocking. It's certainly more newsworthy than the latest peace deal that has allegedly been made with the leaders of Iran, which they deny. While the Jews were bombing Hamas or Hezbollah, one of them this morning as well. And by the way, I support the bombing of Hamas and Hezbollah at any opportunity, just so you know. But that was somewhat disquieting to realize that's where we are, that a mass shooting at a burger joint is below the fold. All right. And you know what else was appeared above the links to the mass shooting at In-N-Out Burger? Were arguments about what happened to the liner of the reflecting pool in Washington, D.C.? Were there vandals involved? Was it just a bad installation job by Trump's slipshod contractors? That argument's been going on for like a month and a half. To me, it's ridiculous that it's an argument. But more ridiculous, scary, shocking, discomforting, is that links to that, arguments about that, appear above the mass shooting at the burger joint, which should give everyone pause. All right. And then another headline that got my attention. I can't read it because the only reason this story made the news was so that news outlets could get this headline. A basketball player, a female basketball player who plays in the WNBA, which probably means you never heard of her, and it's almost guaranteed you never saw her play because nobody watches the WNBA. A woman in the WNBA is getting divorced from her spouse. But the headline is printed. Well, I'll go ahead and read it because I can't read it. I can't give in to what the only reason this is news, because 20-something, 30-something-year-old mentally unbalanced people get divorced all the time, even famous people. And it doesn't make the news because, I mean, while mass shootings are still somewhat shocking, the sudden divorce announcement for a 20 to 30-something-year-old mentally deranged heathen, it's just not newsworthy. But this one is because they wanted to put the headline up that the woman is divorcing. I can't read it. I'm not going to read it. So I don't even know if I can make the point of the story without reading the headline, but I'm not going to read it because I'm not going to say that word. I'm not going to say that word in association with someone married to a woman. I'm not going to use the W word when it comes to a marriage between a woman and another person. Well, I'll just leave it at that. But that's all they wanted was the headline. And even the allegedly conservative aggregators and the allegedly conservative news outlets used the W word in association with this deranged heathen's domestic spouse, partner, whatever it is there. They use the W word, and I will not do it. Just to get the headline. And you know what? The devil will take that. If he can just get conservatives to use the W word in association with a story like that, he'll take that. That's a win. That's a W for the devil. He'll take that. Congratulations to the New York Post and all the other allegedly, I don't know if the New York Post doesn't try to sell itself as conservative, I don't think. But whatever they think of themselves, they're much lower than they think because they were duped by the devil's plan to get all of you people going along with his vernacular so that by the time the next horrible, shocking, disgusting thing comes along, you will have been desensitized to the last horrible, disgusting, shocking, unspeakable thing that you're now used to. You're even calling it what the devil wants you to call it. He likes that just fine. Meanwhile, from there, we go to the Prince of the Power of the Air file. Speaking of the devil. Speak of the devil, as they say. We go to the Prince of the Power of the Air file, where we check in with News Nation, which is written, edited, managed by millennial graduates of the urinalism schools funded by George Soros for their entire lives. And they report on the son of Eric Bieniemy, who's a football player that I had heard of because that's back when I used to watch football. That makes sense because now his son is playing football, which is about the last time I watched football was when people's dads were watching and granddads. Eric Bieniemy's son has been arrested. Listen to this. Elijah Zion Bieniemy. Wow. Elijah Zion. Well, he's not. He's. I don't know if he's Jewish. Bieniemy. I have no idea. I didn't even ask that. But it's definitely a biblical name. Elijah Zion Bieniemy, says News Nation, was arrested and charged in connection with the shooting of his mother. In connection with. What does that mean? Was he like one of the people at In-N-Out Burger driving by who shot it on his phone on the video there and posted it up? Is that how he was involved? Well, he's been charged with malicious wounding, use of a firearm in commission of a felony, and listen to this. Discharge of a firearm inside a dwelling. Okay, so first of all, the urinalism graduates that George Soros has victimized and brutalized, and he's basically eviscerated and emasculated and mutilated the English language so that these kids don't even understand English anymore. This guy wasn't connected to his mother's shooting. That's not why he was arrested. He was arrested because he's been accused of shooting his own mother. Is that too shocking for your delicate ears? It should be shocking a guy shoots his own mother. I mean, even if a guy's just accused of shooting his own mother, that's a shocking accusation. But they say no. As far as they know at News Nation, he was only connected with it. All right. But then the charges brought against young Elijah Zion. Malicious wounding. Is there another kind? Is there another kind of wounding that's not malicious? When you wound someone, there would seem to be malice involved, no matter what. It seems to me malicious is an extra word. And then wounding. Wounding? Okay. Well, if you wound someone with a firearm, I thought that was attempted murder. But now it's not anymore. It's malicious wounding. And I don't know who came up with that. It was someone, a criminalist probably, creating as many types of crimes as possible so that more criminalists and lawyers can be engaged and employed so that, I don't know, they can make what they think is an honest living and it's not. Making a living off the just a system is not an honest living. If you're involved in it, you should get out of it. I think probably the only honest living in the just a system anymore in the crime industrial complex is probably being a cop. That's the only one that has any validity any longer. Because at least you could stop someone in the act of committing a crime and hurting another person. Otherwise, you're just classifying and processing through the product of the criminal industrial complex. And that's not an honest living. It's you should all resign. Malicious wounding. Okay. Use of a firearm in commission of a felony. That's just a whole bunch of extra words that you could have just wrapped up with attempted murder. And then it really doesn't matter what weapon you used. But because we've now classified all kinds of gun crimes, there are 11 or 12 lawyers who will get a piece of the action on this case and cash a paycheck related to income because there's a firearm charge involved. And there are fundraising letters that will be sent out on behalf of gun control advocates as well as Second Amendment advocates because this is now a firearms issue and both sides should be upset about that. And then finally, discharging a firearm inside a dwelling. That just seems extraneous when there was another person standing in front of the gun in the dwelling when you discharged the weapon and shot your own mother. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Why, you might ask, Doug, the Prince of the Power of the Air file? What is that all about? The Prince of the Power of the Air is the devil, and that power that he has is over what we say and what we transmit in the airwaves. That's one part of it. And that story is an example of how he is winning and has dominion in the air. What people say, the way people communicate. That's what the Prince of the Power of the Air is. He has power over the communications, and he obviously exercised it in every aspect of that story, except the shooting of the mom. He wasn't required for that one. That was just a wicked, evil person and a horribly distorted and sad relationship, I'm sure. I'm certain of that. Mia Bieniemy was her name. So she still has Eric Bieniemy's last name. I'm going to assume they're still married, even though they say that he's the son of Eric Bieniemy, and they call Mia Bieniemy his mother. They left that. You're not allowed to say if people are married anymore because that offends people who might have a problem with marriage in the traditional sense, meaning a boy and a girl. Even if they're black, it still might offend people. And so they just leave that out of the story anymore. But so we hope that... and the mother, last we know, she has survived. They say she's suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Yeah, I'm sure. But at last check, anyway, she had survived the shooting at the hands of her own son. And if that can be the horrible tragic event that somehow leads to the reconciliation of this family, that's the only thing we can hope for. Because otherwise, it's just a horribly tragic and awful story that highlights the state of the American family as well as the news media and the just system. So from there, we check in with Bernie Moreno. Have you heard of this guy? He asked. He's extremely attractive audio engineer. You familiar with Bernie Moreno? No, neither was I. Never heard of the guy. He is a senator from Ohio, which would explain why I never heard of him. Because he's from Ohio. And I mean, unless something dramatic happens in Ohio, I generally don't even know Ohio's around. And that's not anything. It's not a slight against Ohio. It's just the way things are. It's kind of like Iowa. I mean, unless you mistake Iowa for Idaho, a lot of times you forget Iowa exists. Or vice versa. I mean, it just happens, okay? It's not like Texas or Alaska, where, like, you know they're there pretty much all the time. So there's just a lot of states right there in the middle it's easy to lose track. Especially when they have a lot of similar letters. It's difficult. But we check in with Bernie Moreno, who is a senator from Ohio. And Bernie Moreno, this is from the Decline and Fall file. Now, I can't say what Bernie Moreno said because it's too vulgar. It's too profane. And now, I want to say something about profanity. I think that there probably is an appropriate time and place for profanity. It's rare. Now, the only reason I say that is because I'm doing a Bible study, and it's brought me to a side study on the topic of profanity in the Bible, which there is some. but it's very rare. And it's used strictly for effect. It's used strictly for shock value. And so once profanity becomes commonplace, it no longer has any shock value. And so it's no longer appropriate. But there are rare cases when profanity is appropriate. Oh, I'm assuming, because it's in the Bible, and if it was inappropriate or wrong, it wouldn't be in the Bible. But it is. But what Bernie Moreno did on the floor of the Senate was inappropriate, because there are certain profanities and vulgarities that it's simply never appropriate to utter. And there are times and places when uttering profanity only defiles the conversation and the person uttering them. And that's what Bernie Moreno did this past week in the face of Fauci. What's his first name? Alan Andrew. I can't remember Fauci's first name. Tony Fauci. And you would think if there ever was a guy around which the use of profanity would be appropriate, it would be Anthony Fauci. And there probably are times, don't get me wrong, when use of profanity in regard to Anthony Fauci is appropriate, but this was not it, Mr. Moreno.
Oh, I know that.
You know Bernie Moreno?
Well, just because their context.
Yeah. Okay, so Bernie Moreno uttered a vulgarity for no apparent reason other than to get people to hear about who he is. Because there's no doubt this is an ambitious punk politician. The lowest order of human being used, not just, I'm not going to say a used car salesman in a bad sense. He is a used car salesman, was a used car salesman, built a bunch of car dealerships, and then cashed out and went into politics under the wing of Donald Trump. And Bernie Moreno said to Anthony Fauci something I'm not going to repeat, but he said it into the official record of the United States Senate. And I'm sorry, Mr. Moreno, that's not appropriate, at least not in that context. So this guy's a senator. He's my age. He should know better. Using the basest profanity in public at an official government hearing, Mr. Moreno, that was as bad as anything Anthony Fauci did. That contributes to the degradation of our civilization as much as anything Anthony Fauci did during the COVID hysteria and panic and flip out. This is a problem, folks. Both sides are destroying the country. Now, one side knows what it's doing. That's Anthony Fauci's side. They know what they're doing. They're doing it on purpose. The Democrats and their allies and the leftists and the liberals and the heathens, they're committing a very well-planned political homicide in broad daylight of America and our civilization. The other side, the Republicans with the likes of Bernie Moreno here, they're committing political suicide almost by accident. And then they're committing everyone who buys their hats and gets their tattoos and votes for them in the election. They're committing all of them to commit political suicide with them as well. That's the Republicans. The Republicans, as I call them. And so this simply points to the axiom I have built quite some time ago that America is operating on at this point in history. America will perish in one of history's most infamous murder-suicides. Historians will look back 1,000 years from now and just wonder how in the world could that have happened. And then they'll document it and they'll say, oh, yeah, I see. And one of the milestones along the highway to hell that the historians will trace will be Bernie Moreno using that word, purposely speaking it into the Senate record against Anthony Fauci. You didn't help us, Mr. Moreno. You hurt. This dirty-mouthed punk is just the latest symptom. Now, Fauci, a symptom too, don't get me wrong. And America will never recover from what Fauci did. And if Moreno, if he had if he had come out from behind the Senate bench to punch Fauci out, right, and the sergeant of arms had had to jump on him and restrain him, I would have had a lot more respect for Bernie Moreno. Because that I can understand. That could be read into the record, and everyone would understand that there was a lot of pent-up frustration with Mr. Fauci and a lot of people who just want to punch him in the face. That's a legitimate desire for a criminal of Fauci's caliber. But Moreno instead disgraced his own two-minute political career that nobody ever heard of and tarnished the civilization of America. He lowered the civility another notch. Donald Trump did it again this week, too, with his comments about Iran, saying we're going to beat them, but then he added a bunch of expletives that were unnecessary. And with Donald Trump, there's no shock value to his profanity anymore, so it's all inappropriate. Mr. Trump, our kids don't need to hear that kind of language from the president of the United States. Mr. Moreno, nobody's wife and kids needs to hear that. Okay, I was in the service. You're not going to make me blush or hurt my feelings by using harsh language. But I would rather not have to explain to my 8-year-old daughter as we're watching C-SPAN what Mr. Moreno meant by that word. Or what did the president mean? I'd just rather not have to explain that. And if you make a parent have to explain that, you should resign in shame and you should probably be arrested and more than likely caned. If Bernie Moreno's mom and dad, if they were alive today, well, they're spitting in their graves right now, knowing that the dirty-faced little boy that they brought to the promised land from the third world hellhole that they managed to escape with him turned out to be this filthy-mouthed little punk. Just a total embarrassment to everything his parents stood for, escaping where Colombia or Venezuela, some third world, just horrible place, brought him here. Anyway, they may have been worthy of the country. Bernie Moreno is not. He's not even worthy of the Senate, and the Senate is practically a house of ill repute, for crying out loud. And Mr. Moreno, you're certainly not due the respect of any decent person in the country. Get out of here with that. And take Trump with you, frankly, if that's the way you're going to speak in public. All right. Now, from there, seeing as I brought up the president, let's check in with the Trumping Socialism file. Last week, Donald Trump's Department of Commerce. So right there, I want to stop. The fact that the United States government has a Department of Commerce indicates that somebody a long time ago decided to turn us into a bunch of communists. The government doesn't do commerce. The government doesn't have anything to say about commerce. The government shouldn't be involved in regulating commerce. And the fact that we have one of those, a Department of Commerce, that was a harbinger that we're all going to be turned into communists. And this past week, Donald Trump's Department of Commerce quietly announced it will designate almost $1 billion in what the Hill.com calls federal incentives for semiconductor manufacturing in exchange for a minority equity stake in 7 countries. Jeez, countries, did I say companies? If they were buying a stake in countries, that would be okay. They can buy the bonds of foreign countries. They're buying stock in 7 companies, chip manufacturers. That's what all that means. Federal incentives means they're going to pay cash money that they took from you and I to semiconductor manufacturing companies in exchange for stock so that the government now owns part of the private company, the publicly held private, there's no private, huh? Yeah. We have a comment from a commerce mouthpiece, Howard Lutnick, who claims he's not a communist, claims he's a conservative. He cares. He's gonna claw back fraud and give you back your tax money. And there's a bonus coming, Howard Lutnick. He says these strategic investments will enhance our country's domestic capabilities. Domestic capabilities. Create high-paying jobs. Uh-huh. That's right. And keep America at the forefront of the semiconductor industry. So they're not even trying to mask it with the idea that, look, we need the government involved with the chips because it's a national security issue. That was their claim when they bought Intel. I mean, they didn't buy the whole company. They only bought 10% of Intel. But at that time, I raised an alarm saying we're all becoming communists. The government should not be buying stock in private companies, even though they're publicly held, I understand that. But still, there's the private and there's the government, that whole line. Okay. Yeah. But they don't even mask it anymore. They're doing it for domestic capability and to create high-paying jobs. High-paying jobs. And I don't know, people hear that, and I guess that's the siren song. If there's high-paying jobs involved, well, anything's worth it. High-paying jobs, I'm willing to become a communist if as long as there's high-paying jobs. And trust me, folks, the communists, they're willing to tell you, oh, yeah, there's high-paying jobs, high-paying jobs, high-paying jobs, as they lead everyone over the cliff. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. Yeah, all right. Doug, how can you call Donald Trump a communist? Howard Lutnick a communist? The government buying into private companies, at worst, it's a little bit of socialism. It's not communism. Aren't you aware, Doug, the communists are over there in the Democrat Party with the Democrat Socialists, Democrat Socialists of America there. They're taking over. There's the communists. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, that the whole Democrat Socialists of America theater that's going on right now, be very, very concerned that it's not a shell game, right, designed by very powerful political forces who want to distract your attention from their socialism by pointing to the naked communist maniacs over in the Democrat Socialists of America with the buck-toothed chick from the Bronx and the Islamists there in New York and the two communists in Colorado. And I'm just telling you, while that's going on, that theater's going on, they're becoming socialists in the United States government, which socialism is just the next step to communism, and this is just another big step along the way. And hence I'm raising the concern so that when the historians pick through the scene of the murder-suicide, they'll know that there were some rational people who were sticking to the foundations that made the country great. Christianity, the free market. Pretty much those two things. I mean, if you have that, if you have a nation where the majority of people are Christian and you give them a free market, you end up with 350 years of relative peace and prosperity. And a lot of people who die go to heaven instead of hell, which is really the big issue. In socialist countries where God is banned and prohibited because God's not a socialist. In fact, see, he's got a whole book. Well, part of the book is against it. It's a death penalty offense. If you do it more than once, you can't steal more than once without being killed for it. And so these people, it's the Donald Trump. They bought Intel a few months ago. Now they're going to buy, I forget, seven. That's it. They should get the political death penalty. They should be voted out of office. I'll leave it at that, and I'll move on to a harbinger in Colorado. That's right, a harbinger in Colorado. a small Colorado town, Hartman, Colorado, which I'm pretty sure I drove through Hartman one time. That's right, I know. Population 30. That's my kind of town. Hartman was a small town on the southeast border of Colorado, right there where Kansas and Colorado and Oklahoma and Texas. Actually, I think it's just Oklahoma, Texas, Colorado. They all kind of bunch together there. And if you've ever crossed that border, I can tell you that when you cross out of the panhandle of Texas into Colorado, it's like departing the third world into the first world. Because there are parts of the panhandle of Texas, I'm telling you, it doesn't feel like you're in America anymore. And then you get to Colorado and you're like, oh, okay, this is still America. All right, you see a gas station that has a functioning bathroom, running water, things like that. And you're like, okay, we made it. So, and I think that might have been Hartman. I'm not sure. It was a small town. It was delightful when we stopped there years ago, escaping the panhandle of Texas. Well, Hartman has been declared abandoned. That's right. Amid fraud allegations and violent altercations taking place between government officials. The fraud, that's been taking place by governing officials. The violent altercations have come up. I'm not sure. I'm going to guess it's because they're arguing over the money they're all trying to steal. And Hartman ends up being declared abandoned by Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. When I saw that, Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, when I saw that, I said to myself, I can't believe that woman is still in office. I thought she had been abandoned by anyone, even a Democrat in Colorado, I figured would have abandoned Jenna Griswold. She looks like a cross-eyed, drugged-up teenage girl who blatantly operated in the 2020 stolen election and throwing Tina Peters in jail. And some of the things she said, I just can't believe she's still the Secretary of State in Colorado. She may be the next governor. Speaking of a harbinger, my goodness, Jenna Griswold, you got to be kidding me. I saw her on TV when Tina Peters went to jail, and I thought, surely this is the end of the world. If this person was elected by, I don't care if drugs are illegal. There's no excuse for that. But there she is, and she has declared Hartman, Colorado, as abandoned. The water system has been ruled a health hazard. There's been years of embezzlement, allegations of embezzlement, and then embezzlement, and then the embezzlers robbed the people who embezzled, and then they filed lawsuits and restraining orders against one another. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is a microcosm of the state of Colorado and the nation. That's right. It's a polity that is completely saturated by corruption, fraud, theft, and hatred. And, well, it may all have to be abandoned before too much longer for our own good, because it'll be ruled a health hazard to live here, anywhere, in any state. So there you have it, raising the red flag again here, waving it. It's trying to get someone's attention. And from there, let's go now. We'll check in to the new Third World File, where we can check in with something we can all relate to, the fact that the mayor of Los Angeles is an insane, voracious criminal and thief and crime family operative that is Karen Bass. So we already knew all that, so none of this will surprise you. Now, the thing in Colorado with the cross-eyed teenage girl and the abandonment and the allegations and the embezzlement, that might be a little bit surprising because it's like out in the country in Colorado. This is Los Angeles. We all know what's going on in Los Angeles. We watched them burn down a large section of Los Angeles. Well, I guess they didn't burn it down. Maybe they didn't burn it down, but they certainly haven't fixed it. And in my estimation, there are people in Karen Bass's political orbit and her family and her crime family all they're all angling for ways to make money on the real estate deals that will come out of the fires out in Malibu and Palisades and all that. Just, I know, color me, color me cynical to accuse Karen Bass and the other criminal family members of wanting to profit from a tragedy, a fire and all that. Well, listen to what else is going on in Los Angeles. You heard about the fire out at Lineage Logistics. It was a giant cold storage facility where they kept massive amounts of food frozen for distribution to people who eat, which is everybody, including people in East Los Angeles and the Boyle Heights neighborhood. We all eat. That's why there's a giant frozen food storage facility there in the city. It's so that people can get food reliably and eat on a regular basis, which we've been doing in America for some 400 years. Well, the storage facility there, Lineage Logistics, basically a giant freezer. Well, it burned down. A fire started on July 17th. Firefighters did not get it extinguished until June 24th and 17th. That's a week. This thing burned for a week. I remember watching the stories and wondering, like, what in the world is going on? How do you not put out a fire in a week? And I don't know all the details. I'm sure if I talked with the firemen there, they would say, well, you know, here's the deal. And there were chemicals. I don't know. But it just seems like a week is too long. It's almost like after 3 days, you would declare some sort of emergency and you'd have like the military coming in from other states and you would put the fire out. But that did not happen in Los Angeles. Probably they called the Marines. The Marines were afraid to go because they don't want to get shot to death in Los Angeles, killed and eaten there in the streets. Now, I'm just joking about that. The Marines would have gone, but anyway, you know what I mean. Anyway, so what's happened here is the company Lineage Logistics has filed with the city to rebuild the factory. And Mayor Bass has issued now her third executive order delaying acceptance of any rebuilding and any consideration of any future use of the site until she gets paid. I'm sorry, no, that's not in the story. I made that up. And then she has a long litany of things that have to happen before she'll even consider allowing Lineage Logistics to rebuild their cold storage facility. And she released a statement, of course. According to the mayor, she says, the people of East Los Angeles and Boyle Heights continue to suffer due to irresponsible corporate action, poor air quality, flies, and odors from spoiled food that had been in cold storage before this horrible tragedy struck. Unquote. That's the mayor. And so she says that it's the company's fault now. Okay, it's the company's fault that the fire burned for 7 days, even though there is significant evidence that the fire started because of the solar panels that the company was ordered to install. But we don't know. It could have just been an accident. But anyway, the fire burned for 7 days. She says that's the company's fault. And now there's flies and odors from spoiled food. And somehow the mayor of the city is allowed to imply that that's the company's fault. And she says there's a health hazard. And then she sicked County Supervisor Hilda Solis on the company. Hilda says, we're not playing around. We're not playing around. We're not playing around with Lineage Logistics or anybody else. We're not playing around. That's unquote Supervisor Hilda there. And when asked about the fire's impact on the public schools, in the Boyle Heights neighborhood, Bass said, okay, why are we talking about the public schools here? We got food rotting in a giant disaster scene, rats, flies, disease, that's, and they want to know, what about the public schools? Well, wait a second. What about the pile of burning garbage rotting in the streets? Is that not the responsibility of the mayor? I mean, I grew up in America. I thought that if there was a disaster that led to a health crisis that the mayor was supposed to step in. And that, yeah, we could argue about whose fault it was later. We could send bills to the company, whatever it takes. You know, we could settle all that later. Let's take care of the rats and the flies and the disease and the odors and the gases escaping. No, that's not the mayor's responsibility. Oh, I see. I'm from another planet or something, I guess. I misinterpreted. What the mayor is tasked with is issuing statements about the public schools, and she did that. She said, I'm impressed with the public schools in the Boyle Heights neighborhood and all the district plan to do. The fact that they have cleaned up the schools and changed all the filters in the air conditioning in order to protect them students, unquote. So she's very impressed that they changed the air filters in the... Meanwhile, there's rats and rotting. Okay. Now, she is concerned. Obviously, you can tell she's concerned. So she doesn't even have to say this, but she goes ahead and says it just so that we all feel better. I am especially concerned that the smells are going to get worse. And what I hate to see is that all those kids have to remain indoors at school because of all the smells of the rotten food. And the rats and the feces and the disease spreading out in there, unquote. While she has not issued the executive orders and gotten the money to clean up the health crisis brewing right there in her city. And she's allowed to get away with this. Why? I can't even imagine. The governor should have her arrested by the National Guard as they go in to clean up the mess. The first thing they should do is arrest her. Oh, but the government, he's the Don Corleone of the family. Oh, no, he's the nephew. But still. Anyway. All right. So there's Los Angeles. No surprise there, right? But it's still very disturbing to actually hear. From Karen Bass, and to just know that she was elected by popular vote, allegedly. Worldview. That's yeah. Now, I didn't know that someone could sing 100% through their nose the entire time. This guy took lessons from Willie Nelson as a child in order to pull that off. Let's see now. So back to Karen Bass. We can all only hope that Karen Bass was actually installed by a fake rigged vote. Because if it's true that many people in Los Angeles voted for that person for mayor, then surely all is lost, at least in Los Angeles. And some might think that that is the case. All right. Now, let's go from there to the lies, damn lies, and statistics file, where we check in with Anthony Fauci. So Anthony Fauci's diaries were leaked. They weren't leaked, actually. They're public record. This guy, Anthony Fauci, has so much hubris, and he was so bulletproof. At least that's what he thought at the time. And he still does appear to be bulletproof to me. He was so full of himself that he kept a diary on a government computer so that he could write a book later about how great he was. And he made the mistake. If you're a criminal, telling the truth can be a mistake. And Anthony Fauci made the mistake of telling the truth to his computer in his diary. And there's a record there where he had a conversation with Tom Frieden. I don't know who I can't remember all these people from the COVID hysteria, but he was one of Fauci's confidants.
And he writes, Frieden called me this morning, and we discussed various aspects of the outbreak. He and I are on the same page, thinking this is acting like a bad influenza. The death rate's probably something like 0.2 to 0.3%, says Fauci. And now this, he wrote that, and then it's time-stamped because it's on a computer. He wrote that before he got in front of the country and the Congress and everyone else and said that, now he worded it very carefully so there's wiggle room, so he'll say he didn't actually say this, but what people heard was this is going to be 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. That's right. 10 times more lethal, and then 99.998% of the country actually believed that and just flipped out. And now we have evidence that he didn't believe that. And just so you know, at the time, I didn't believe that. And people thought I was crazy and just contrarian, but I thought, you know what? I just remember they'd say this all the time with the swine flu and the Ebola and the Hunter virus and the whatever, pick one. Every few years, there's it's going to kill us all. Oh, yeah, right. It's like the boy who cried wolf after a while. So there we have evidence that he lied in front of God and everybody, and he's been pardoned, of course, for that. But now he goes and takes the fifth, and people are actually saying, well, maybe that's going to get him in trouble. And I'm asking, well, how is that? How is this guy ever going to get in trouble? I hope he does. I hope Anthony Fauci is foist on his own petard at some point, but I have very little hope. I think he'll probably die in peace. Well, he's like 85 years old already. If there was ever an octogenarian who deserved to die in prison, it would be Anthony Fauci. Probably his only hope to coming face to face with his own mortality and the fact that he needs to reconcile himself with God would be to throw him in prison and put him in the striped uniform that was worn by 50 other guys and it's got stains on it. He needs that. Will he get that? Somehow, I don't think so. But where there's life, there's hope. Okay. From there, we go to the, from Anthony Fauci, we go to the Like a Suicide file where we check in with is this Canada? Let me see here. Doctors published a paper in the top medical journal pushing for what they call death by organ donation for people who are already seeking euthanasia. So we've got people saying, if you want to kill yourself, let us kill you by chopping out your organs. I mean, I know that's kind of the vulgar, crude way to say it, but that's what they're saying. Look, if you're already suicidal, we really feel bad for you and all, but can we cut your heart out? I mean, you'll die either way, but... And then could we start with your kidneys and then your liver? And then we kind of want to save the heart for last because, well, just trust us. We trust the science. We know what we're doing. Anyway, this paper called Contextualizing the Death Donor Rule in an Era of Voluntary Euthanasia was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in early July. You kidding me? This isn't even Canada. New England, that's in America for crying out loud. The New England Journal of Medicine allowing a paper to be published, just raising the possibility that if you already want to kill yourself, can we help? And then could you help us? We could even pay you. Well, not you, but we could pay your estate so that then your family could fight over the money afterwards. It's a win-win situation all the way around. So they allow this to be published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the co-authors, who I'm not going to name, say the patient's authorization, experience, and outcome are not altered by whether death occurs moments before or during organ retrieval. They want to cut their hearts out while they're alive, and they're saying that in a peer-reviewed clinical document. I guess I'll call it. And they go on to say voluntary euthanasia creates a new ethical context. Complicating the context for interpreting the don't kill rule. They have a don't kill rule. If you have to have a rule like that, you probably shouldn't be a doctor. Wait a minute. Well, there's a rule. I can't kill him. Okay. Yeah, they say that the don't kill rule might not apply because euthanasia circumvents the rule against killing by physicians. That's what we've all been shouting from the rooftops for 20 years. You're circumventing the rule. Well, good doctors didn't need a rule, but I guess as soon as we came up for a rule against killing by physicians, we should have realized right then we're in some problems. The paper goes on, in this landscape, that's the landscape where doctors are allowed to kill patients. In this landscape, the moral significance of strict temporal sequencing, post, not pre-mortem retrieval, is diminished. Okay, now that may or may not be true from a legal perspective, a moral, ethical, medical, scientific, whatever you want to call it. But I can assure you, when you cut the heart out of a living human being, no matter what they thought, no matter what they want, no matter what they told you, your responsibility for murdering that person will not be diminished in the eyes of God. But here's the thing. These alleged doctors writing this paper have no fear of God before their eyes. And that's the real problem. That's what's really scary. You want a doctor standing over you with a knife who doesn't understand that he's responsible before God to do right? You don't want that. Because eventually someone will offer him enough money to cut out your kidneys and then move on to your liver. And then once everything's been well saturated with good blood, they chop your heart out. Do I want to read any more from this paper? Oh, they say ethical focus should shift away from identifying a precise moment of biological death and toward respecting patients' autonomous decisions. And then advocating for a transparent and publicly accountable process. So not only are we willing to kill you, we're willing to do it in public and then provide the documentation so everyone can see exactly how we did it so that then they can justify what we did in their eyes and we can justify it in our eyes as if that means anything because we're all going to meet God and then God is going to judge you according to your works. You evil, evil. Wicked, horrible, awful human beings. Unbelievable. The inhumanity man is capable of toward his fellow man knows no limits. And that's why we need God. And that's why Jesus Christ came and died for the sins of guys like this. Guys who'll chop your heart out while you're alive for money. He died for them. So all of you people who think that God is mean and unreasonable and judgmental, just keep that in mind. These guys will chop your heart out while you're alive just because you're depressed. You think you want to kill yourself. Meanwhile, Jesus Christ died for you and them. All right, so stick that in your pipe and smoke it for a little while. All right, now we go to the justice system file where we check in the state of Kentucky. Where Kentucky, the headline says, Kentucky releases a child killer. And I'm thinking, really, they released a child killer? I think the state of Kentucky reimburses child killers via their state welfare medical system for the aborting of unborn kids. I think. If there's any, they help people buy the pills, even if there's not an ambulatory abortion clinic left in Kentucky. Child killing is certainly something that's tolerated, so no one should be surprised that, I didn't download this guy's first name by accident because I don't know why, but Exantis is his last name, and I don't remember. His first name is something like, I guess I don't want to say it because I could get it wrong. He broke into the Tipton family's home December 7, 2015. Stabbed young Logan Tipton to death as he slept, and then attacked other family members, including Logan's sister, who survived. That's 2015. 2018, a jury finds the murderer not guilty by reason of insanity. And then all the state can manage to do is get him a 20-year sentence for all the assault counts on the people he did not kill. And so he was not convicted of murder because a jury found him not guilty. Okay. Which I'm told that never happens. Well, here, it just happened right here. July 29th of this year, the murderer was released with no parole and no supervision. And the father of the, So the father of the child who was killed and the other children who were brutalized in their home in the middle of the night for no reason. This murderer didn't even know this family. I don't have time to get into, read what happened in this guy's mind that he did this. I have no idea. It's inexplicable. And it doesn't really matter. That the motive at this point, it's valuable for proving the case, but it's of no determining weight in the sentence, which should have been death, painfully, quickly. But it wasn't, and now he's been released. The father wrote on Facebook, he posted up on Facebook, the day the murderer, the guy who killed his child, was released. Dad writes, the judge and jury gave this monster a slap on the wrist while handing down a life sentence to my family. Oh, man, that hurts. Wow. Can you imagine you're a dad? And then he put up a subsequent post on Facebook. He says, I'm trying really hard not to let this break me. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how to go on with life. This may be my breaking point, says the father of the child who was killed. And the killer's been released right in front of his face. And this is the type of thing that makes people insane. Even good Christian people who love the Lord and know the truth, this kind of thing can push you to a breaking point. A point where you do something irrational and detrimental to everyone. Which is why we need the swift and painful death penalty for people like this. And not guilty by reason of insanity should never be an option. They could be declared guilty but insane and then executed as you execute an insane person, which I don't know how that would vary and differ, but we could work out the details on that. That I'm willing to negotiate. Okay. Now, meanwhile, from the superstitious religion file, we check in with Pope Leo XIV, who I think is still in office. I'm not sure. Taekwon Johnson, 19 years old, was captured last week after two men were found with gunshot wounds to their lower extremities. At last report, the two men have survived, and Taekwon Johnson has been arrested and is in jail for shooting them. Taekwon was born, you may have never heard of Taekwon Johnson if you're not a Catholic. But Taekwon was born via emergency cesarean. He showed no detectable heartbeat, no improvement after roughly 65 minutes of resuscitation. Doctors expected catastrophic neurological damage or death, but then the attending physician prayed for the intercession of 19th century Spanish priest Salvador Valera Parra. Moments later, the infant's heart restarted, and so paperwork was submitted on behalf of the attending Catholic physician and Mr. Parra. The child recovered fully, speaking at 18 months, walking at age 2, and shooting other people at age 19. So no apparent lasting effects from the prolonged oxygen deprivation. And apparently his association with the Catholic Church didn't help with the shooting of people and all of that, even though he was written up in a case that has advanced Valera Parra's cause towards sainthood. That's right, the Pope approved this young man's birth as a miracle done by Valera Parra. And so do we have anything else on this? Johnson himself was interviewed last year after Parra was elevated one more notch towards sainthood. They interviewed the kid, Taekwon Johnson, the attempted murderer here. He was interviewed last year, and he said the recognition of this man as a potential saint strengthened his faith, and that he felt he was destined for a second chance at life, meaning he was already a criminal in trouble.
He had expressed interest in paying it forward and possibly joining the military, but instead he apparently relapsed into a life of crime and shot these two other guys, but that's okay. He can go into the little box in the confessional and get down on his knees and then clear everything up, and it will not affect, I know what you're all wondering, does this affect the potential sainthood of Valera Parra? And no, thankfully this does not. That's all I got. That's the superstitious religion file. Don't get involved in that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. We will return next time. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.